शांति We heard a beautiful song that the company of God is such a unique company. No human company can be compared with God's company. And this is the essence of Srimad Bhagavad Gita also. Make God your companion, as Arjuna made him his companion, because companions are such who guide us at every step, and they never wish ill of us. They are always our good wishers. When God becomes our companion, then we also are able to overcome whatever difficulties that come in our path, whatever situations that we go through. He is always there to lend His hand and take us across in a smooth manner. Srimad Bhagavad Gita, the knowledge is so unique. Why? Because it is beyond what human beings are experiencing. It takes us beyond. It transcends our stage from a gross level to a higher level. Knowledge of Gita is incomparable in the way that it transcends us from a gross level to a higher level. And it is applicable for all human beings. Not only just for Hindus or for any particular sect or particular type of people, but for the entire world. And that is why we all know that the translation of Gita has been done in maximum languages of the world. No other book has received so much of translation as Srimad Bhagavad Gita, which means people from all the faiths, people from different backgrounds, wanted to know and understand the wisdom that is within Gita. No other religious text got so much of translations in so many languages. Therefore, we can say that Gita is such a book of wisdom where each and every human being finds an answer to the different types of problems that they are facing. It has pure spiritual knowledge, and its intrinsic beauty is that its knowledge applies to all the human beings and does not postulate any sectarian ideology or secular view. It is approachable from the scientific realms of all religions and is glorified as the epitome of all spiritual teachings by the Supreme. If we just look at Srimad Bhagavad Gita and its background, why is Srimad Bhagavad Gita so special? We all know the story of how it came into the practical form. That Veda Vyasji once was sitting in his meditation and he went into a trance. And in the trance, he saw the divine visions of God and the knowledge that was related by God to Arjuna. So the first day when he came out of his trance, he wanted to sit down and write down whatever he saw. But trance is such a stage where people forget. They are not able to recollect as it is shown. So the first day, whatever he saw in his trance, he was not able to write it down. So the next day, he knew that the trance was not complete. The vision was not complete. So as he sat in trance in his meditation, he took something to write so that whatever he would see, he would note down. But it is said that the next day also, he became so engrossed in seeing the divine visions that he was not able to write as it is. So the third day, he requests God, "Oh God, you are giving me such valuable treasures, such powerful wisdom, but how can I pass it on to the human beings if I am not able to write it down? So I need someone to write." So it is said that the third day, Ganeshji comes to write what he will be narrating during the trance period. But Ganeshji comes with a condition and he says that wherever you will stop, I will go away. Because I am a fast writer, so you should constantly go on narrating. And non-stop, I would go on writing. Vyasji agreed with this. So it is said that the third day, when he sat in his meditation and he went into the trance, whatever he was seeing, he started narrating. But the third day's vision was such which had great spiritual significances, which was filled with some secrets. And in order to understand the significance and the secret, he had to take a pause. But in his subconscious mind, he was aware that if I take a pause, Ganeshji would go away. So I should not pause. So in this dilemma, what he did was, he narrated the scenes that he saw as it is and thought, once I get the matter, afterwards I can relate it with the significances. So he narrated all the scenes that he visualized as it is. But afterwards, when he sat down to clarify the significance behind those wisdom that he had narrated, he was unable to do it. Why? Because he had narrated the whole vision in Sanskrit. And Sanskrit is a powerful language where one word also has so many different meanings. And after the trance, he forgot the vision. So he was not able to recall from which angle or with which purpose he had given that word. So he left the Gita as it is, which was then interpreted by so many people who tried to understand Gita. And therefore, there are so many opinions about the wisdom of Gita. Some said that the war took place practically. Some say it is the war that is constantly going on in human minds. Some come out with a different meaning. Others would come out with a different meaning. And that is why we find one Gita has so many types of interpretations, as is the level of consciousness of each and every human being, as is the state of mind of each and every human being. Accordingly, they interpreted Gita. The original Gita, which was given by Vyasji, was quite small. It had 18 chapters, but was quite small, round about in between 400 to 500 shlokas. But in the process of interpretation, some great souls, they added to clarify those shlokas. And this is how we find that the Gita comes up to 700 shlokas in 18 chapters. The wisdom which is there in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita is unique in the sense that it gives the salvation for all different levels. We all know that the state of mind Arjuna was having, the nervousness that he was going through, the depression that he came into, and he needed salvation for that. So there is salvation for the state of mind of souls in the present world. So at an individual level also, the wisdom of Gita is there to guide us. Then we find that the Mahabharata war and the message of Gita, which came into existence, was because there was a family problem. Pandavas and Kauravas were members of one family, the Kuru family. But there was a difference of opinion in the family. And in the difference of opinion, they started fighting. And the difference of opinion was due to wealth. Kingdom opinion, they started fighting. And the difference of of opinion was due to wealth, kingdom, land, number of villages. And what happens in today's family? In the families, wherever there is joint families, we find after some time the joint families start breaking up. And the breakup is because of either wealth, either land, either property. This is the cause. So in Srimad Bhagavad Gita, we get the wisdom, or there is the salvation for the state of affairs in the families. So it is at that level also we find the wisdom of Gita guides us. Not only that, but in the society, we find that societies are also misguiding individuals. There are certain characters like Shakuni present in the society which are taking the children or guiding the children in a wrong direction. So there is salvation for the state of affairs in society at large also. In a nation, we find that the need of the wisdom of Gita is also there at that level, the national level. Because in each and every nation we find the fight is for the throne, where Dhritarashtra was also under the attachment of his own son, was willing to hand over the throne to the wrong people in the wrong hands, and was not able to give justice to the right. And this is what is happening in today's world also. So the wisdom of Gita gives us salvation for the state of affairs at the level of the nation. And not only that, but in the whole world. As God has promised, yada yada hi dharmasya. So at the world level also, when the whole world is being driven towards a great destruction, a great catastrophe, God comes to uplift, to salvage the whole world. So the wisdom gives us salvation for the state of affairs in the world also. So from an individual level to the world level, from the micro level to the macro level, the wisdom of Gita guides each and every human being. This is why the knowledge of Gita is so unique. And everybody has tried to understand the wisdom which is there in Gita. How it is applicable at the individual level? Because we find that in everyone's life, there comes a time of ultimate challenge. When life seems unfair, every resource is over. Faith, values, patience, compassion, persistence, they are pushed to our limits. Some people use this opportunity to become better people, and others allow these experiences to destroy them. They want to end up their lives. They don't want to lead such a life. So the wisdom of Gita gives salvation to those who have lost hope in life and guides them how to lead a better life, as was with Arjuna. Not only that, but at the family level, there are such parents whose third eye of wisdom is closed due to attachment in their children. And they are not willing to spare even an inch of land, which is compared to a pinpoint of a needle, in the place of 5 villages. Pandavas asked only 5 villages. But Duryodhana says, I would not give you a pinpoint of a needle also. So the ones who are religious and wise, they suffer in today's world. In other words, those people who want to accumulate in their life, they are not able to accept the religious and the wise, and they are not able to give them happiness. They are so egoistic that they will never give up feelings of distaste, anger, revenge, even if the entire community shall be destroyed. So this is what is happening in the families also. So the message of Gita guides us at that level also. How we can get happiness by sharing. In the society, there are characters like Shakuni. And a society where people are blind towards the sinful and unrighteous actions. Those who are not able to differentiate between dharma and adharma, being dutiful and undutiful, good and bad, and are deprived of the eyes to discriminate between justice and injustice. And therefore we find in the society also, Shakunis are being created more and more, day by day. And they create the fights in the society. They do not allow the people of the society to stay peacefully. This is their task. So it's the same Mahabharata war that is taking place. At the national level also, Dhritarashtra, where the nation has been captured by the feelings of drit, that is deceit, where rights are governed ruthlessly, thus the picture of the entire nation is very dreadful. Where the vision towards truth is blind, and there is destruction of mental and soul power. The soul power is diminishing. People are becoming mentally bankrupt because the feelings of deceit are taking over everyone's life. And this is how the nations are being governed. So the wisdom of Gita guides us at the national level also. And today the whole world is facing a grave problem. So God Himself has to incarnate on earth to give a new turn to the history. He has come to remind us of those lessons which are forgotten, so that our minds can once more become free from vices. Attachments to human beings, and we can become the embodiments of yoga. That is, we can connect ourselves to God. We can establish a beautiful communion with God and get the experience of uplifting the self, elevating the self. And this is how we are able to create a better world. And this is where it reminds me that Some great predictors also have mentioned India will be the guiding light for the whole world. Because of the powerful wisdom that it possesses. But sometimes we are not aware of the treasure that we possess. And we find that Indians are blindly running after the materialistic world and materialistic comforts. And the Westerners, who are fed up with all those materialistic comforts and that way of lifestyle, they are turning towards India for that wisdom. They come here. Go to such places just in search of the true knowledge, in search of the true wisdom. Where can we find that true wisdom? So it is such a beautiful book of wisdom where the salvation for all different levels is received, from the individual level to the world level. And if we just look into the Mahabharata, before the Gita knowledge came in its place, Pandav and Kauravas belong to the same family, the Kuru family. And the word Kuru literally means to do or to be done. So Pandavas, who are the Pandavas? Pandavas means those who have a loveful intellect with God and those who perform pure actions. They are termed as Pandavas, who made God their companion, who had such deep love for God, and so they obeyed whatever directions they received from God. And Kauravas means those whose intellects are not willing to connect to God. Those who perform impure, irreligious and sinful actions. Those who have a doubtful intellect. And therefore it is said, Nishchay buddhi vijayanti, sanshay buddhi vinashyanti. Those who have a faithful intellect towards God, they are victorious. Because God is always on their side. And those who have a doubtful intellect, they ultimately lose everything because they are against God. And we all know the story that from the Pandavas, Arjuna, and from the Kauravas, Duryodhana, both go to God and ask for help. How can you help us? It is said that at that time, God was resting. So Arjuna stood by the feet and Duryodhana sat by the head side. And when he came out of his rest, they both asked. So God says, well, you may ask whatever help you want. And he says, I have two things. One is my unlimited army, and on the other side, it's me alone. So this is where Duryodhana was not able to estimate God's strength. So he felt, what will God alone do? Why not I take the army? So that is when, because he had a doubtful intellect, who did not understand the capacity of God, he said, I would like to have the army. The ego became the barrier which did not allow him to understand the capacity. Ego became the barrier which did not allow him to understand the capacity of God. So the one who was sitting by the head side is the symbol of ego. Whenever we are in the egoistic stage, we are not able to understand the capacity of God. And we deviate from the actual path. In order to understand God's capacity, we need to bring that humility within our lives. So Arjuna was able to understand God's capacity because he was humble. The first step towards God, to be a faithful intellect, a loving intellect towards God, is we need humility, the value of humility. And God also loves those who are humble in their ways. To the egoistic, he also laughs at their ignorance, at their immaturity. And so Arjuna says, when God, you are by my side, I do not need anything. I've got everything. But that was the time when God also puts the condition, whichever side I will be, I would not fight. And that is why maybe Duryodhana thought, if God is not going to fight, then what's the use for taking him on my side? But he did not understand the capacity of God, that even though if he does not fight, still he can guide in such a way that he enables us to become victorious. That is his strength. Definitely, God would not interfere in our karmas. We have to fight the battle of our life ourselves. But we receive the guidance of God at each and every step to become victorious. This is his strength. It is said that there are two types of activities performed by every human being, the divine and the devilish activity. Within the divine activity or the sphere of religion, there are those with the spiritual emotions, which are known as Pandavas. And that is why 5 Pandavas and 100 Kauravas. Percentage is always upon 100. So if we take the whole world as 100%, because world is a family. So globally, if we are one family, there are Pandavas and Kauravas in today's world. And 100% in this world, there are only 5% who are Pandavas. And the 5% also, 1% each. How many are Yudhishthir? Only 1%. Yudhishthir means the one with a stable intellect amidst the war also. So how many people in today's world are ones with stable intellect, who have the equilibrium within and who are able to take accurate decisions in life? Only 1%. 2% is Bhim, who is also 1%. The one who is full with soul power and the one who is equipped with a strong willpower. In today's world, people lack willpower. something happens and immediately we get so desperate. We are not able to face the situation. There is no willpower. We see students, a paper examination, and they become so nervous. They have no willpower. They have no confidence also. They have made all preparations but forget everything. And they are not able to face that failure. They start committing suicides. If a single paper exam cannot be faced by people, what would happen in the practical examinations of life? The different situations which will come as real examinations in our life. How can we face them? So only 1% of the people of the world have the capacity of strong willpower, whatever may come, but will be able to overcome. So this is the powerful determination or willpower they possess. Only 1%. The third is Arjuna, the one who is always ready to learn and grasp. Arjan, Arjan means to learn, grasp. And how many people have this attitude of learning from every situation, from every test that comes in life? Only 1%. Normally, whenever circumstances, situation comes, we start blaming, we start cursing, we start speaking ill of people, speaking ill of what is happening. We do not understand that this situation that has come in my life definitely wants to teach me something, wants to make me experienced, wants to give me a very powerful lesson in life which I can become a source of inspiration for so many, and I am able to guide them. But hardly do we see situations from that perspective. So Arjuna is also only one who was ready to learn and grasp at every moment. Whatever God said to him, he was so obedient and followed the directions that he got. And to become such obedient, everybody cannot be such Arjunas, only 1%. And who is Nakul? The one who is principled, who is lawful in his life, who knows how to maintain a balance between love and law, between principles and practical situations. Here in the world, people start compromising their values also, their principles also, when certain situations come. So Nakul is also only 1%. Everybody cannot become Nakul. And the fifth is Sahadev, the one who is cooperative and has divine insight, divine intellect, who can understand, who can sense, and get intuitions beforehand. But he gives his cooperation when he is asked. So similarly, in today's world, people become cooperative but do not have the divine insight, the divine intellect. And that is why they give their cooperation, where they get the honor, where they get the name, where they get the fame, where they are garlanded. They have a nameplate written there so that people come to know that this person has given his cooperation in this manner. So he has experienced the fruit here itself. But Sahadev never expected anything in return and constantly gave his cooperation. So such Sahadevs are also 1% only in today's world. So where are we? Are we Yudhishthirs in that 1%? Are we Bhim, the one with a powerful willpower? Are we Arjunas? Are we Nakuls or are we Sahadevs? If we just look at ourselves, maybe we can see ourselves. Which of the Pandav I am? But definitely I would say that those who are in this gathering are Pandavas, any one of the Pandavas. And so, the ones with a loveful intellect towards God, a faithful intellect towards God, and making God their own companion, and taking the guidance from Him at every step. So, congratulations to all of the Pandavas sitting here. There is no Kauravas in this gathering. And who are the Kauravas? The Kauravas depict the ones who are irreligious. The Trashtra means the one who is blind with ego of power of the kingdom. The ego of land that he possessed and the ego of physical power also. And Gandhari means the one who keeps blindfolded purposely, who did not want to see what injustice is taking place. So purposely who blindfolds. And today we find there are so many people who, although understanding this is whatever is happening is not good, not accurate, but they purposely blindfold themselves, do not want to see what injustice is taking place and become helpless. So those are Gandharis. And the 100 Kauravas. Once I got the whole list of the names of Kauravas. And to my wonder it was, everybody's name was beginning with Du. Duryodhana, Dushasana, Dushah, Dushal, Dushas, Durmashan, Durmukh, Dushkam, Durmad. Everybody's name was starting from Du. And the last one sister, amongst the 100 Kauravas, her name was also Dushala. Du here depicts the emotions of sorrow and wickedness. Dushtata. Dushtata means wickedness. And giving sorrow, dukh, to others. So those who are having that wickedness, cunningness, and who constantly give sorrow to others, they are Kauravas. So, the Kauravas are egoistic, with wickedness in their minds, not having a place for the Pandavas in their heart, and who constantly give sorrow to others, which we find in today's world. There are so many Duryodhanas, Dushasanas. There are such children who misuses wealth, misuses the money of the parents and grandparents. Duryodhana, one who misuses dhan in a wicked manner. So there are Duryodhanas. Dushasan, who does not have self-discipline in their lives, who always has a mischievous attitude and constantly gives sorrow to others. So they are termed as Kauravas. And today the world is absolutely at the edge of the times of another great transformation. And it is again the same state as shown in Kurukshetra. At such times of conflicts and confusion, when human beings' intellect have become completely bankrupt and downtrodden due to the false actions, the entire humanity is in need of the knowledge of Gita. This is such a war field for which God Himself is beckoning on us, is calling us. And one needs to become an instrument to spread this spiritual awareness and become a warrior in order to fulfill the divine will. So when God is beckoning on us, can we really become an instrument to spread this spiritual awareness in the world and fulfill the will of the divine? Yes. This is why maybe this occasion has come for Cochin Nivasis also, for the residents of Cochin, because God loves us so much. And to spread that spiritual awareness, He also needs our help. To spread His message in such a manner and spread that spiritual awakening in the lives of human beings also, who are in the darkness of ignorance. Everybody needs that light. So it's the same episode that is being repeated. That is why in the Mahabharata it is mentioned, when there is Mahabharata in each and every home, in each and every life, in each and every family, remember, that is the time of Mahabharata again, where God will have to descend to empower the souls with spiritual wisdom and to demolish or destroy the ones with ignorance. And this task no human being can perform. It is only when God brings this spiritual awakening in us that we are able to awaken the whole world as well. And therefore in Gita it is mentioned, the first reason that the Gita is born in a situation of conflict. In the very midst of the great Kurukshetra war, both the armies are drawn up, the flight of missiles have begun, the conch shells have sounded, and the clamor of war is tumultuous, and the hearts of the participants are torn by the conflict. It is then that the teaching of Gita comes. So Gita is said to be the scripture of conflict, to give us the answer how to overcome this conflict. And here Srimad Bhagavad Gita gives a training. It's a practical training for long-lasting victory in the war of life that has been depicted. It enables true victory over the conflict between Dharma Kshetra and Kurukshetra, between the divine and devilish characteristics, between the differences of caste or sex, good and bad qualities. So this is how the message of Gita, the wisdom of Gita, is applicable for all the religions of the world also. And it is not just the scripture for the Hindus only, but it is for everyone. Everyone receives the guidance from this book of wisdom. And it not only gives us theoretical methods, but it gives us the practical methods and how to use that wisdom in the practical form in our practical lives. Kurukshetra is not just a plain in Haryana, but there is a Kurukshetra within each one of us. It is within our psyche that the Asuri and the Daivi powers are drawn up in array against each other. And it is within the mind of our consciousness that this battle has to be constantly fought. So Kurukshetra means the field of action. And in the field of action in our lives, the good and bad qualities that everyone has, the negative and positive qualities that everyone has, when we are empowered by the positive qualities, the negative qualities arise. And it is a struggle that we have to go through. And sometimes we are not able to make up our minds. What is positive, what is negative? And this is when sometimes people, they are not able to understand and they take up the negative path. Temporarily they may achieve some happiness also, but in the long run they experience a defeat. So it's a constant struggle that is going on. Today also, if you go to Haryana, if you go to Kurukshetra, the place where the war is shown is a very small ground where millions of people cannot even accumulate. Akshoni, if the armies were Akshoni in number, unlimited in number, today we find that the population of the whole world, we can say it is Akshoni. So how can the population of the world be accumulated in one small place on that plain of Kurukshetra? So this life is Kurukshetra, the whole world is Kurukshetra. And when the whole world is Kurukshetra, in this Kurukshetra, in this field of action, everyone has to fight this battle. The Kauravas and the Pandavas are within ourselves. The good qualities, the positive qualities are like Pandavas, which are diminishing. And the negative qualities are increasing gradually day by day. And in that struggle we experience as if we are sometimes being defeated. And the negative is taking over our lives. But if the spiritual awareness is there, then we are able to overcome the negative also. And therefore it is mentioned in Gita that the path towards the ultimate truth of life is within man himself. It is created by his endless potentials and boundaries in the form of his mental, intellectual, emotional and spiritual facets of his personality. So understanding that and understanding the message of Gita, how we have to go within, understand our true identity, understand our true self, and then go to that ultimate truth and experience. Therefore, the verses of Gita are spread in 18 chapters. The first chapter stating the problem of the human situations. The second chapter as stating the central issues and the approaches to resolving them. From chapters 3 to 17 as elaborating these approaches, and the 18th chapter is like summing up, which have been taken the very essence of Gita, which is as follows. The first is, Gita is a dialogue between God and Arjuna. That means when we become Arjuna, we want to learn, we want to grasp. So it's a dialogue between the Self and the Supreme, the Self and God. Today also, when human beings get into confusion, when no human being can guide them, where do they go? They go to the temple of God. And in their prayers, they are actually talking to God. They are communicating to God. It is like having a dialogue with God. But it is a one-way dialogue. We talk. But we do not have time to listen to what he is saying to us, what he is trying to tell us, because our radar system, our intuitions are not that powerful enough to catch what God is trying to tell us. So Gita means it's a dialogue between you and God. We have made this world completely complex and polluted. We can make this world a better place to live in, provided each person instills this faith in oneself of where does he want to go and how he'll reach that goal he has created for himself. So this is what he has to understand. He has to be very clear about the vision, where he is going, where he wants to go, and how he is going to go through that path to reach that destination. So we have to understand all these secrets. So the first chapter, which is Vishada Yoga, lamenting the consequence of war, where it is shown that Kurukshetra is a scene of a war field. And there are two main characters, God himself and Arjuna. The witness to them are 4 million soldiers and their commanders. As soon as the names of both the armies are proclaimed, Arjuna starts feeling deeply disheartened. This fear in him is because of the thought of losing all his dear and near ones, and even the sin of committing such a grave act of war. Now, when we all know Arjuna was a Mahayodha who had all the potential, who had fought so many wars single-handed, who had faced Bhishma, who had faced Dronacharya before also. Mahabharata was not the first time that he was facing all his seniors, all his elders. When he was hiding in the 13th year, it is said that at that time also, when Duryodhana was suspicious about their existence, where they are, and he took the army single-handed, Arjuna faced all of them. He faced Bhishma also. He faced Dronacharya also. So Mahabharata was not the first time that he was facing them. If he was not depressed at that time, why should he get depressed this time? But if we just look at this situation with an example, that in the olden days, in villages, we had the 5 wise people, the panchayat, who used to give all the decisions. If anybody committed anything wrong, they gave a decision. And they punished. The punishment was also such, they did not have any compassion towards them. That was the sort of their punishment. Now one day it happened that out of the panchayats, one person's son, he did something wrong. And he was brought in front of the panchayat. And when the father sees the son, and he has to give a decision, he has to give a punishment for the wrong that he had done, what will happen to him? His attachment arises. And at that time the wisdom also comes to him, and he starts appealing to the others, that the youngsters, sometimes they are misguided. They happen to go onto the wrong path. We should not punish them immediately. We should give them a chance to improve so that they can become better citizens. They can become better people for the future times. And from their own doing they learn something, so we should give them a chance. Now this person who had been giving decisions every time, he did not have this wisdom. But when this person who had been giving decisions every time, he did not have this wisdom. But when his son comes and he is to be punished, that is the time when the wisdom starts coming and he is starting up to appeal. The same thing is happening with Arjuna also. He did not have love for the Kauravas, and that is why he was not in the Vishad. He was not lamenting on the consequences of the war. He had no doubt about his strength and the strength of the other four brothers. He knew they were equally powerful. But he was doubting the strength and the potential of his own sons, because from their side, the sons were also in the battle. If they will be killing the sons of the Kauravas would also attack their sons. And this is where the attachment was arising. And that is why the only person he had to appeal was to God. So he says to God, I would not like to go into this war, into this bloodshed, even if I get everything. But after getting that throne, will I experience happiness? Because my sons are being killed. So the attachment, the desire towards his near and dear ones was coming up in such a way. So here Arjuna means, Arjuna is symbolic for the consciousness of those people who are trapped within their own desires and relationships. When there is a constant war between one's virtues and vices within the mind, then the mind gets exhausted and is not ready to fight with the devilish power any further. The intellect is no form to judge except to give up in front of the devilish powers. Especially when a person is going through long sickness, starts losing hope from life. And that is when he wants to give up. He does not want to struggle anymore. When a person is meeting constant failures, he does not want to go further with these failures, loses hope and wants to give up in this struggle. When there are constant family conflicts going on, then also a person wants to give up. Or when there are so much of tensions accumulated that he is not able to cope up with the stresses, he feels as if he is losing. That is the time he wants to give up. He does not want to fight this battle. So, this is what the state of Arjuna was. And at that time, what was the first thing that God told him? In the second chapter, he is given the knowledge of Sankhya Yoga, Yoga of knowledge, the wisdom, the long-lasting eternal authority of the soul. So the essence of the second chapter is, from verse 1 to 10, it's a dialogue between God and Arjuna in context of the coward attitude of Arjuna. From the verse 11 to 30, the topic of Sankhya Yoga, the body being the costume of the soul, and the soul being immortal. From verse 31 to 38, the description or narration of the need to stabilize in the self-religion to deal with the war. From verse 39 to 53, the topic of Karma Yoga, Yoga in action. And from verse 54 to 72 is the signs of a person with a stable intellect, sthir buddhi, sthita pragya. So what are the signs of a sthita pragya? That is given, that is described. So this is the essence of second chapter. And in the first 10 verses, when Arjuna is communicating with God, finally he surrenders. So Arjuna accepts the position as a disciple of the Supreme, and taking complete of him, request God to instruct him in how to dispel his lamentation and grief. This chapter is often deemed as a summary to the entire Bhagavad Gita. Here many subjects are explained, such as Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Sankhya Yoga, Buddhi Yoga, and the soul. Predominance has been given to the immortal nature of the soul existing within all living beings. And in that, we find that Arjuna means today's human being, how it is compared in today's world, that the intellect is not able to judge and the mind gets tired, thus the individual is drawn to depression. Because there is no power within to direct or rule the mind in the right direction. A ray of hope is only possible when supreme intellectual personality guides us. When the supreme descends and answers the questions which are distracting the mind of an individual, and the truth is that we are souls. We are that conscient entity and not this body. This body is like a costume. So the body is the field to perform action, karma kshetra. Whatever seed in form of good or bad action is sown, grows into a form of a particular sanskara, the personality trait. The expansion of this field are our senses. Human being is dependent on the three gunas, Sato, Rajo and Tamo, to perform actions. He is not able to stay without action even for a moment. And this is why this field is called as Karma Kshetra or Kurukshetra. And the knowledge or the laws and commandments of the war is given by God to Arjuna, where he says that it depends on the capacity of each Bharatvasi to tolerate happiness, sorrow, cold, heat, praise and defamation. The vices in the awareness and the attitudes make one vicious in such a way as when water would take its form as it is placed in a mold. This is a conflict between the field and the field man, in which the devilish traits have to be completely demolished and our state of awareness gets established in God. A stable person, that means a soul, cannot be possessed by his senses and vices as he sees himself to be equal in happiness and sorrow, and he becomes worthy to attain the element of nectar, amritva, that is eternity. So here it is clearly mentioned, it's not a physical war. But the war or the struggle is when there is happiness and sorrow. When there is cold and heat, praise and defamation. So it's not a physical war where God inspired Arjuna to kill some people, to have a bloodshed. If God would give such inspiration, then if today's human beings kill people who have negative attitudes, who have done wrong, why do we put them in prisons? Well, if God has given this inspiration, why do we cannot forgive them? So this shows, when God clearly mentions, it depends upon the Bharatvasi of how much he can tolerate. So how much tolerance he has. And in order to increase this tolerance, it is said in the body, a human being has to pass through three stages, childhood, youth and old age. Similarly, to attain a new body is also a stage of transformation. Within that process, the soul is not destroyed. The soul is eternal, imperishable, indivisible, invisible. And that is when it is said the soul never dies and is never born. It is beyond birth and death, an eternal entity ever existing. The soul cannot be killed when the body is killed. The five elements of nature cannot harm the soul in any way. But the glow of the soul increases with virtues and dims with the vices. The soul is powerful when not entangled with worldly bondages and weakens when entangled in the worldly bondages. So it is said, it cannot be cut with the sword, it cannot be wet with the water, it cannot be dried with a fan, it cannot burn with the fire. It is beyond the effects of the physical elements of nature. The soul is imperishable. It is eternal entity, and we are all that eternal beings, eternal souls, spirit. Just as a person renounces the old costume with great happiness while wearing a new one, similarly the soul too renounces the old body while taking a new one. This is an eternal law, that the one who has taken a body has to leave one day. The soul is immortal, but the body is not immortal. We keep on changing. Just as this costumes also, they get old, and when they start tearing up, we leave it with great happiness. Similarly, the body is also made up of the five elements of nature. So by using it too much, it also wears and tears, and that is when happily we have to leave. But why do people lament when leaving the body? Because human beings know in today's world they have not performed such good actions, as much as sinful actions they have committed, and so they have the fear of their own sins, and they do not know where it will take them. So they feel, we are comfortable in this body, we don't want to go somewhere else. So it is the fear of their own sins that is coming in front of them. And that is when God says to Arjuna, hey Arjuna, according to the original religion of thyself. So which is that religion? Is it the religion that we have divided the world into, Hindu, Muslims, Christians? Is it this religion that God is talking about? No. The original religion of the self. The self is the soul. So what is the religion of the self? You are not worthy to fear, as there is no other more beneficial path than to fight being the embodiment of thy religion. But if you do not fight this battle, you will commit sin by losing your original religion and the fame. The prosperity within the soul is stable and imperishable. This is according to the principles of Sankhya Yoga, the knowledge and yoga. So the original religion of thyself, what is that? Everything has its original nature. The nature of water is coolness. We can heat the water. Once it is heated up and we leave it aside, it will come back to its original nature. Original religion is of coolness. The original religion of fire is heat. So everything has its original nature. So which is the nature of the self, the soul, the spirit? This religion that we have divided the world into, this is not what God has taught us. But the original religion of every human being is peace. Everyone is aspiring for peace. Everyone is aspiring for happiness. Nobody wants sorrow in life. What do we ask from God? Oh God, grant me peace. Oh God, give me happiness. Why do I want peace and happiness in my life? Because that is my true nature, and I am comfortable when I am at peace, when I am in happiness. We never feel comfortable when we get angry. We never feel comfortable when we are in sorrow. So the original nature, original religion of the self is peaceful, happiness. Our nature is love. We are all aspiring for love, true love. Blissful. How can I be knowledgeful? How can I be pure? Because that is my original nature. And what is the use of stabilizing in the original religion? What does spirituality mean? Spirituality means stabilizing the self in the religion of the self and experiencing those qualities, empowering ourselves with those qualities and becoming powerful from within, recharging the batteries of the soul so that we constantly radiate those qualities in our relationship, in the world. We create such atmosphere on the basis of those vibrations. So how can we do that? That will be the topic of tomorrow's morning session, which is the positive lifestyle. How these qualities are positive. And when these qualities are brought in our lives, creates a life on the basis of those positive qualities. So now for a few moments we shall just sit in silence and try to recollect what we heard in today's session and meditate. That is, focus our attention on those teachings and feel that I am also that imperishable soul, eternal soul. This body is just like a costume that I have put on. But my original religion is so pure in nature. I'm so peaceful in my original nature. So let me go into that experience. So for a few moments, we shall sit in meditation, contemplating on the self and feeling the difference between the body and the soul. This body is just like, just as we can feel the difference of the costume and the body. We can feel the difference. This is just a layer that is on this body. It's the costume that I have put on. Similarly, I am that spirit, that point of divine light, that eternal entity, that sparkling star. And let us feel the difference between the body and the soul, so that we can easily detach ourselves from the body and bodily bondages, and we are able to create ourselves in that consciousness, stabilize in that consciousness, and go into the experience and feel. And for that, visualize the self as a point of light, as a divine light, not a physical light, but I am a soul with divinity. So are we ready? Can we go into that state of meditation for a few moments? So let us take our attention away from this physical world, away from the surroundings. Sit upright. Let us be the masters of the physical senses. The more the physical senses are in a concentrated state, the more we are able to discipline our mind. So for a few moments, let us take our attention and focus within. As I'll give you the thoughts, do not just repeat those thoughts, but try to go into the feelings and feel. I am a soul. For a few moments, I turn my attention away from the physical world and focus within. This body is just like a costume that I have put on to play my role on this world stage. But I am separate from the body. With my mind's eye, I visualize myself as a divine being, a conscient entity, radiating divine light. As I visualize myself, with my inner eye, I can see the aura of light spreading around. Being in this aura of light, I am the embodiment of light, a powerful spirit, a powerful soul. I am a soul, an eternal being, imperishable, indivisible, conscious entity. Five elements of nature cannot harm me. slowly and gradually I realize my original nature is peace is my quality. I become the embodiment of peace. I'm radiating the vibrations of peace around me. I can feel the peaceful vibrations around me. My thoughts are calming down. My mind is becoming silent. Stabilized in the peaceful nature. There is a very pleasant feeling being peaceful. I experience inner happiness. I feel so light within. When I am peaceful and happy, there is no bondage. I experience freedom. There is immense power in this peacefulness. As if my battery is being recharged with the power of peace. And it refreshes me from within. This is my real identity. This is my true religion. Now I realize I have to become an instrument in God's task. Of the great transformation of the world. I have to become an instrument to establish positive qualities in my own life and inspire others also. I can inspire through my own life. As I empower myself with the divine power, I become the master of my physical karma kshetra. I become the master of my senses, and I'm able to channelize my potential for creating a better world, a beautiful world, a heavenly world. And this is how I become worthy an instrument in God's task. As I become a true Pandav, take God as my companion, I feel charged from within. I know He is there to guide me at each and every step to win this battle of life and become a source of inspiration for many others around me. I am so enthusiastic, feel motivated when I have this thought that I'm so fortunate that God has chosen me to become an instrument. I have to prove the worthiness through my qualities. Constantly have a dialogue with God and seek His advice at every step. Slowly and gradually, I turn my attention to the physical self, feeling empowered with such elevated thoughts. Om Shanti Shanti.